Yo, what's up? Shadano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests like Mama Momo appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. It is Wednesday. How are you, Ramona Shelburne?
I'm doing good. Yeah. Good is the right answer for today. I don't know. You know, I got this new app. This is called the Aura Ring. I thought the NBA had a good idea getting these wearables, right?
Yeah.
So it kind of like tracks my sleep and my readiness. And it's really fun, but it's making me a little bit obsessed. So today my Aura Ring tells me that my readiness today is good, but my sleep today was just okay. 6 hours and 19 minutes. Not as good as it should have been.
You got to get a minimum of 7, Momo. That's the way this thing works. You got to get a minimum of 7. But it's hard with little kids, man.
I know. Well, no. For me, it's always about how late did I go to bed. It's always like, you know, that Seinfeld bit about like night guy and morning guy,
and
that's me every night.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm totally wide awake. I'll be like falling asleep on the couch at 9 o'clock. Then I wake up and I get that second wind and I'm like, night Momo. And I'm wide awake.
Night Momo.
Night Momo is on the prowl, right? Like, it's just like, I am up. And then then I have to force myself to go to bed. I'm like, Ramona, you have to get up and do radio in the morning. Ramona, you have to get up and take care of the kid in the morning. Like, you have to talk yourself and do this. But sometimes Night Momo wins and sometimes Morning Momo wins.
I like Night Momo. I feel like we should explore Night Momo more. Like, what is this alternative reality of Night Momo? Explain this to me. Like, what does Night Momo do at night?
Night Momo is who I want to be all the time. That's who I want to be. That's who I am. That's my essential nature. That's like,
right.
Like, it's like nighttime is the right time.
Right.
I mean, it is like, that's me at night. And then, you know, the clock starts getting towards midnight, 1 o'clock. And like 1 o'clock should be the cutoff. 1 o'clock should be like, go to bed now.
Yeah.
And I always start, it's almost like night mode. I was like, I'll show you. I could stay up past 1 a.m. I could stay up. And then
I do.
And then And then all of a sudden, and then I can't fall asleep as good, because if you don't hit that ideal bedtime window, now it's like you're restless and then you don't sleep as good. And then you end up with your readiness score is just like, eh.
So does Night Momo indulge? Like, is there like a cocktail, an alcoholic beverage?
No,
is there some wine? What's happening there?
It's a TV thing. It's a late night Amazon shopping thing. It's a like, let me do
that
yoga.
Can't be good. Shopping late at night can't be a good thing.
It started during pregnancy. It's like, it was a nesting thing. And now it's just like, I can't help it. Like, I'll be laying in bed and like, instead of just like, you know, reading something and going to bed, I'll get the like Amazon out and I'm just like scrolling. That was
funny.
Like, why are you buying things at 2 a.m. on Amazon? Why?
Because I can, Nev Dog. That's why. Because
that's what Night Momo does.
Night Momo will do it. How did Night Momo feel about Joe Kelly? Are we building him a statue or what's going on?
Oh my gosh. Night Momo was retweeting and gifts of Joe Kelly making that face all night.
So good. So good.
That face, like, I mean, I don't know if he realized how amazing that was, and if he's like, but every single person who took a screenshot of it seemed to get like a different version of the face. Like, what was it? Was it a kiss that he was doing? Was it like a, like, how would we describe Joe Kelly's face as he was talking to Carlos Correa walking off?
He was doing like a pouty face, like making fun of him, like being pouty. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so good. I mean, the only thing I didn't like about the Dodger game last night was that it wasn't a player who was on the 2017 Dodgers who brushed back all the Astros. You know, I wanted it to be somebody who could, it was like, I wanted the eye for an eye. And Joe Kelly was on the Red Sox that year, who I guess also lost to the Astros, the Lion, Cheat, and Astros that year. So I get, he has a personal thing with them. But I feel like it should have been Kershaw or Kenley or some pitcher who directly was hurt by the Astros cheating who got to have that moment. But you know what? Okay. There's another game today.
Yeah, but I also think that it's cool that Joe Kelly did it because now he also endears himself to his teammates, right?
True.
Like, he now all of a sudden, like, there's no way Joe Kelly is paying for a meal when those guys are on the road, right? Like, there's no way that's happening at this point.
Well, because, you know, normally I am not a big fan of all the old baseball rules, right?
Yeah, like throwing what
you're supposed
people
to do,
over.
And
right.
this
yeah.
is the way the game is played. And we police ourselves. And we take care of the game, right? Like, I usually think it's kind of stupid. Like, it's like, wait, why is he hitting that batter again? Because he looked at him after he hit a home run. Like, there's usually some dumb reason for it. This is absolutely a good reason. Like this, and he didn't have to hit anybody. Like, he just threw behind them. Like, it was, that's what the good part was. Like, he didn't have to hurt anyone. I mean, he definitely made them like duck. He definitely made
right.
them worry.
Well, the one to Correa was a breaking ball.
Hurt
so yeah, the one to Correa was a breaking ball, so it wasn't that big a deal.
Yeah.
The one to Bregman, he threw 96 miles per hour. Yeah.
Yeah, and but he got out the way. He didn't hit him, right? I mean, you know, he was okay. So I think, like, that's always, I always am like, that's the way you do it. You don't want to put a, you don't want to give them a base, but you don't want to hurt somebody. Like, we did that a little bit in softball. Like, we generally speaking, we don't hit batters in softball on purpose unless it's something truly egregious. Right. But the reason being is, like, base run, usually it's like a 1-0 game. Like, you don't want to give them a free base runner if you can help it. And they, in baseball, they do a little more of that because they pick their spots and they have, you know, this, there's like a list of offenses that'll get you hit the next time. Like, if you look at the pitcher too long before you run to first base on a walk or even a home run or something, right? Like, that'll get you hit. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what the Astros were going to get all year this season, if not for the pandemic. Like, they were going to get that treatment in every single series. And I, you know, who did the pandemic benefit the most? Probably the Astros, because people stopped caring that much about their cheating scandal. But yeah, the Dodgers only get to play them because of COVID, right? They would not have gotten to play the Astros except in maybe, no, I don't think they would have played them in spring training either. They would not have got to play them except in the World Series.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. But I was excited. Dodger boy, Greg Bergman, I would imagine you were all fired up. Were you worried early in the game that the Lion, Cheat, and Astros were going to pull off a victory? Because it didn't look great for the first four innings. The Dodgers were hitting the ball hard, but it was basically lining out basically to every single player on the field for the Astros. Were you worried at all yesterday, Dodger boy, Greg Bergman?
No, I was just more annoyed because they were hitting the ball so well, and they were just – the ball was dying. It wasn't going over the fence, and there were all lineouts, and they just couldn't find the holes, and they were just hitting right two guys. Mm-hmm. Eventually, that was going to get through, and it did. But Joe Kelly was so great because after he brushed back Bregman, he yawned like, oh, well, no big deal. And then in the post-game press conference, he yawned again just to double up on it. It was so funny. That's the best gift
ever. I love
ever,
his quote, too. Yeah, I love his quote. I don't remember the words. I guess my expression was what I interpreted in my head he was saying.
Well, he said, like, allegedly he said to him, according to Dusty Baker, he said, swing the bat, B.
Yeah.
As in, you know, female dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And apparently
uh-huh.
Dusty Baker was talking, saying, like, get back on the mound, MF-er.
Right. Well, you know, look, Dusty's got to take up for his guys. He's only been there for like 3 minutes.
Yeah, but here's for Dusty, it's got to be weird because, like, he wasn't the guy who did who cheated. He wasn't the guy who led all.
No.
So
right.
He's sort of having to answer for another manager's crimes, right?
Yeah.
Like, he, in some ways, I actually think Dusty would probably feel the same way as the Dodgers. Like, he was managing the Nationals at that time, I think, in 2017. And, you know, I think Dusty's as old school as they come. So I don't think he blames anybody for being mad at the Astros over this.
Yeah, look, I get it. Right. But he's got to take up for those guys because that's who he is. And yeah, he was the Nationals mm-hmm. manager that year.
He's like a defense attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Just hired to represent the client.
Yeah, for sure. But it was fun. It was exciting. And let's just hope that they win again. Because the Astros, I went on a radio station yesterday and kind of, I was expecting to I was expecting mm-hmm. it for it to be contentious, Momo, when I went on a Houston radio station yesterday.
Right.
They actually were very nice. They were very cordial.
What are they like in Houston?
Oh, they hate LA just as much as we hate them.
But do they defend the Astros? Do they think that the Astros
were being targeted or scapegoated? The host didn't necessarily defend them, but clearly the audience, they were representing that the audience were defending them. And, you know, hey, we still got the trophy. And, you know, what happened in game two and what happened in game seven? And, you know what I mean? Like, there's that, some of that still.
Okay. So the defense is that's not what helped them win. They won it outright. They didn't give up the home run to Marwin Gonzalez in game two, right?
Right. And then game seven at home,
that they were
with
good
the Dodgers, you lost. Yeah.
Right. Yet you lost, yeah.
So that's
you
their
Darvish.
Position.
Yeah.
But my thing was, look, the whole, and Greg brought this up yesterday, and the callers did a great job of, we did debate prep yesterday in the first segment of the show. So the callers were giving me anecdotes that I could use throughout the interview, and they did a great job, and Greg did too, and Laura did too. And so I was able to kind of lay out, like, if you look at the home road splits between Altuve, Bregman, and Correa, I mean, there's a stark contrast. Stark contrast,
yeah.
Okay? And then we also talked about just game five. Like, think about it. If game five, they didn't swing at 54 off-speed pitches by Clayton Kershaw. He had multiple leads in that series, okay, or in that game. Kenta Maeda had a lead in that game, and obviously Kenley had a lead in game five. And if the Dodgers win game five without the whistling that was going on, all the shenanigans that were going on, then they win in game six, and it's over, and they would have been the champs. So, yeah, I said, look, I said it straight up. I said, I'm going to tell you, the audience in L.A. has a real beef, and they're like, say it. And I'm like, I'll say it right now. You guys cheated. The Dodgers deserve to win the championship in 2017.
Ooh.
So I defended the honor of L.A. and the Dodgers.
What did the Houston radio people say?
They laughed. They just laughed.
Oh, they just laughed. Okay, yeah. That's what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm always curious to hear what the defense is. Like,
they did a whataboutism actually on the way out. And I heard them when I hung up because I decided to flip it on their stream because they asked me at the end about Mookie Betts. And they're like, yeah, what about Mookie Betts? Like, didn't he cheat with the Red Sox? And I was like, well, it's different. The Red Sox really kicked their ass. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And they beat him everywhere. It wasn't like they were just, you know, so it wasn't even a competitive series. And, you know, we know that Mookie spoke to the team in the clubhouse. We don't know exactly what that conversation was like. But he did have a real heartfelt conversation with those guys when he arrived. And that's where I left it. And then when I hung up, they were like, oh, yeah, real convenient. Just because, you know, the Red Sox whooped their butt, you know, oh, yeah, that's a convenient excuse. I almost wanted to call back and be like, no, there's a pretty big difference in losing a series that's non-competitive in five games than losing in game seven when you should have won game five because you cheated.
Correct.
Like, the Red Sox didn't need the cheating.
Yeah, I always love when you listen to what happens after you hang up the call.
Yeah.
Like, how did they digest what you just said? So that happens to me a lot. Like I'm always driving around and I'll do my call-ins with Mason in Ireland a lot of times when I'm just driving. Actually, that was more pre-pandemic because I don't drive anymore. But but like back then, I would do a call-in or something, and then I would hear them like talking about what I said. I'm like, yeah, that's not exactly. No, I don't think you got the point there. Right, like John always misrepresents it, you know.
Yes, maybe, totally. Right? That's an Ireland move. That's like
an Ireland move.
It is. It is like his signature right there.
Yeah. But like, I think with the Astros, I think what they don't understand is you don't get to say, "But we still won," because the whole point is exactly what Kenley Jansen said when he was on the show with us, George. I don't know how long that was.
Six weeks ago.
Which is. There were so many pitches that they laid off, and as a pitcher, you're like, how did they lay off that one? That was a really good out pitch. There were so many pitches that it was like they knew what was coming. Like they were just right on top of that pitch. And I know as a batter, how we always used to say, think outside, react inside. So that was our mantra when we faced, because in softball, most of the pitches people throw are curveballs, and curveballs break to the outside.
Yeah.
It's like the most pitchers out pitch is a curveball or a rise ball. So whenever you would face a pitcher like that, you would think to yourself that they were throwing, you would always have in your head that they're throwing the rise ball. If it wasn't a rise ball, you'd react. But if you think that it's going outside, it's probably going to be a ball or it's probably going to be high. And then you have to react if it's not. If it starts inside, you go, okay, that's the fastball I'm going to swing at. everyone has a different approach, but if you knew it was coming inside or if you knew it was going outside, the whole game is different. Then there's no reaction time issues and there's no decisions to make or no strategy. You just sit on the pitch that you want to hit. It changes everything. Plus, not to mention what it does to pitchers out there. When you realize that they're hitting your best stuff and they're laying off your out pitches, it changes your confidence. Like, how can you have confidence throwing your out pitch? Like, for Kenley, his out pitch is the cutter.
Right.
He throws that cutter. It's actually a fastball that just cuts. He just has a natural cut on his fastball. Mm-hmm. He throws that, and it's a devastating. It's not Mariano Rivera level, but it's close. And he just knows that people can't hit that. And if all of a sudden they can hit that, how do you pitch?
Yeah.
What do you do?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it changes. Only the one pitch, right?
Yeah.
Hey, coming up next, Momo, you and I, we're going to go to the bubble. We're going to talk some bubble.
Ooh.
There's a lot of stuff going on. And it is apropos that today is a national day of one particular thing. And I'll explain what that means in a second. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance here on 710 ESPN. Get your home quote at progressive.com today. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Before we get to the bubble, Momo, I want to ask Laura. Laura, you went out yesterday, and this is following you now. You went to a restaurant yesterday, sat outdoors. Now, the last time you did this, you got stuck with a Clipper fan next to you. Now, this time, you got stuck with an Astros fan somehow next to you. How did this happen to you again?
Well, last time, I invited the Clipper fan without knowing he was a Clipper fan to my table. This time, we got there, and, you know, the tables are separated, and there's a girl. She was wilding with her Houston gear and everything, and I'm like, I'm with the same person that I was with last week. And I'm like, yo, how do we get caught up in this? Like, how do we get stuck with these trashy fans around us? I don't understand. The worst part is she's married to a Dodger fan. So I'm like, I don't know how that marriage is working out right
that
now.
That should be a divorce waiting to happen.
Exactly. I should just stay home, George.
I'm telling you.
You know, George, I was like, during that 2017 World Series, I was there working for ESPN, and they didn't really have me do much. Like, I was always like, hey, I'm available, but, you know, they didn't, like, they had all these baseball writers there already, so I just kind of, like, ran quotes and tried to be helpful. So I would mostly sit in the press box, but through your Baseball Writers of America card, you can buy World Series tickets. So I put in for World Series tickets. I think I got four to each game. So my friends would – so I just basically let my family go. I used my tickets to give. I bought them, right? Obviously, they cost a lot of money, but I got them for whatever Facebook. And they give you like the worst seats in the house. Like, they're the upper right field corner. So a couple games, Nevin and my dad, my brother went. A couple games, some of my softball friends went. And I went up to go check on them one day. I was like, okay, I'll walk up and I'll come see you wherever the seats are. And I walk up there. And do you know who is up there?
Who?
Lee Jenkins and his wife.
Oh.
And his wife is from Houston.
Oh.
And they were sitting up there, like, cheering their hearts out for the Astros. And wow. I was like, I don't know about this. I really like you guys in real life. But, like, you're going to sit up here in this section and cheer for the Astros?
Yeah.
And she's like, well, that's where I'm from. And I'm like, so?
Yeah. And what? Yeah.
You live in L.A. now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I have sympathy for this.
Well, and hello, hashtag no cheering in the press box.
Yeah. I mean, well, no, they're up in the stands. Okay. Those are the tickets that we bought, right? So they're way up in the right field pavilion. You know, it's hard. Like, Andrew Friedman, you know, Dodgers president, baseball, right?
Mm-hmm.
From Houston.
Right.
So he had to go, but all of his friends and family, all of them are Astros fans. So poor Andrew had to go back home after the Dodgers lose in that asterisk of a World Series, okay, now that we know that they cheated. And he had to go home and just listen to all of his friends and family rag him about it.
Yeah.
For two years.
That's not fun.
Oh.
Yeah, that can't be fun.
Oh.
You know what's been fun is the bubble. Just the fact that there are zero coronavirus tests, the fact that people are shotgunning beers. I feel like the guys are really living their best life there as best that they can. But the games are starting. What?
Do you think they're living their best life?
Oh, I think some guys are. They're taking advantage of it big time. You don't think so? I think the single guys specifically.
I think they're living their best PG-13 lives.
Okay.
Yeah. Right? Maybe even just PG. Well, now 13 because they are shotgunning beers. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, this is definitely like, it's more like your best summer camp life.
Mm-hmm.
Boarding school life. Yeah. Kind of like that. Like there's no social life outside of just everybody else who's there. There's no going to the club. There's no hanging out with girls. There's no none of that. It's just you and the guys.
Right.
For 3 months.
I mean, Dwight tried to do that DJ set, but nobody showed up.
So bad. Yeah. I feel so sorry. I love that picture, that image of Dwight. I mean, did you see the LeBron yesterday with Rachel Nichols got him on video where he was just like yelling out Taco Tuesday to no one in particular?
Yeah.
He's just wandering the halls after practice yelling out Taco Tuesday.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fantastic stuff. It is. It's just great stuff. So, Momo, let me ask you this. So, Anthony Davis is practicing today. He was practicing with glasses. So, he was playing like who used to wear the glasses? Was it Antoine Carr who used to wear that old school back in the day?
James Worthy is the most famous.
Did he wear glasses? He wore goggles.
Goggles. Kurt Rambis wore glasses.
Yeah. Kurt Rambis did wear glasses. Yeah. I would like to see Anthony Davis wear glasses in-game, if possible. It would
be
cool.
I want him to wear the James Worthy goggles. I think those are like Hall of Fame-level accessory.
Right. And very Lakers-esque, right, if that were the case.
Yeah, very. It's like an homage to Big Game James.
Yeah. So Anthony Davis practicing is obviously a good thing. Because if you're the Lakers, if you win this game against the Clippers, you've pretty much wrapped up the one seed, right?
Yeah, but I think this whole thing is indicative of the way the Lakers and Clippers are approaching it. So if Anthony Davis was on the Clippers, there's no way he'd be playing. He'd be load managing this game.
Right.
He'd be out. Like, nope, he's out. Not even going to think about it. Like, the Clippers aren't rushing any of their guys back. Like, there was no sense of urgency to get Montrez back or Landry or Zubac. Like, all those guys who just showed up, like, I can't see them playing. I mean, they just got there, like, and they just got out of quarantine. They're not healthy. They're not in shape. You haven't been playing. I don't even think Montrezl Harrell's back yet.
No, I don't think so.
He still hasn't even returned. Mm-hmm. So I think the Clippers are taking this, these 8 games, like very, very load management-y.
Right.
While the Lakers are taking it kind of the way they have the entire year, where everyone really does try to play. Like, they play through injuries, they play more minutes. Like, they've just had a completely different approach to things this year than the Clippers. And it feels weird that, you know, the Bucks were making sure people didn't play too many minutes. Like, they were doing that Spurs and Warriors thing. I mean, what did that do? Like, we ended up having a 4-month layoff. So I don't know how resting necessarily did anything during the year.
It is going to be a fascinating approach, though, right? To see which style works out, right? Like, because, you know, if the Clippers don't win, that's going to be one of the reasons people choose, right? And vice versa for the Lakers, right?
Correct.
They're going to be like, oh, they should have taken more of the Clippers approach. Like, there's going to be some of that at the end of this playoff series, the potential playoff series between the two.
Yeah, I think that they LeBron really sets that tone. And I always go back to something Ty Lue said when LeBron first got here, is we always used to ask Ty Lue, like, gosh, don't you think LeBron's playing too many minutes? I mean, he played 42 minutes, 48 minutes, or 44 minutes. Like, it just, aren't you worried he's going to wear down? And Ty Lue would always say, LeBron feels like he gets stronger the more minutes he plays. Like, he feels like that's how he gets into shape. And he doesn't feel like he wears down. It's in his mind, he's building up so that when he does play those max number of minutes, he's got that in the tank, whereas other guys are not used to playing that many minutes. Like, the idea that you're saving yourself so that you can, you know, play. Think of it like a marathon runner. Usually when you train for a marathon, you never actually run a marathon as in your prep. You build up, you run 2 miles, and you run 4 miles, and you run 8. And you build up to around, like, I don't know, 15, 16 miles. Mm-hmm. But you never actually do the 26.2 on a training run. You save that for the day of the marathon because it takes so much out of you to run the 26.2. You just kind of have to have built up to about 16 and then trust that once you get to the race day, your body will just carry you. that's how the Clippers are playing. That's how the Bucks are playing. The Lakers are like, no, let's like bust out a couple of marathons in preparation.
Right.
Let's just
right.
bust out a couple. Now I know I can do the 26.2 because I've done it 3 times already.
All right. Coming up next, let's get into the fallout from Lou Will and how that could affect the Clippers. We'll get into that a little bit on the other side. We are back in 2 minutes. Sedano Show continues here on 710 ESPN. Mama Momo hanging out as she does every Wednesday. Momo, we were going to talk about Lou Will, and Bill Plaschke is going to join us in about 10 minutes of the LA Times, longtime columnist. And it is National Chicken Wing Day, so it is actually apropos that we will be talking about Lou Williams. Yes, it is. That we will be talking about Lou Williams today. Where are your favorite chicken wings? If you had to pick a spot in Southern California where you're like, I go to this spot because it's got the fire wings. Because we know in Atlanta, clearly, Magic City has the fire wings, hence why Lou is there, hence why his name is on the menu, the Lou Will Lemon Pepper Wings. Excellent reporting by you, by the way, over the weekend as that was all breaking. but where are the – before we get to the Lou Will part of this, where are the best wings in L.A. for Mama Momo?
So I'm not a good person to answer this. I'm just, like, not that into wings. Ooh. Like, I just think it's a whole lot of fat and skin, and I just, like – I'm like, where's the meat? Yeah, I know. I'm, like, weird. And, like, when I eat the wings, I, like, end up pulling off all the skin. So I just eat the meat, and I kind of, like, don't get what you're supposed to get out of the wings. Like, my mom loves chicken wings, and she'll just, like, get them anywhere. So, like, we're actually a good duo because I'll just give her – I'll be like, Mom, you want my wings? Do you want my drumsticks? You know, like – so I'm not a good person to ask. I don't know. Are you a wing person? Are you like that?
I love it. I love it.
Greg, do you eat all the fat and skin?
I eat all of it. Greg, where's the spot?
The spot that I go to the most is Big Wings. It's right here on Laurel Canyon. Just delicious lemon pepper wings. I'm with Lou Will on that. It's all about the lemon pepper.
Lemon pepper is fantastic. It is the best flavor. You know, whenever I'm just ordering wings, like Wingstop is good. Like, you know, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that's my favorite one. Wingstop is good. But I'll get the lemon pepper mixed with the garlic ones, and oh my God, I mean, your breath is ridiculous, but it's so good. I mean, they are so, so, so delicious. The thing with wings, Momo, is that you can go like the traditional wings, right? Like you go to like a wing place. Like there's a place in Gramercy Park called Wings and Pot. There's another place called
actually Wings and Pot. I mean, I didn't know that we could sell things like that, but okay.
It's George's type of place there. There you go.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So
it feels like this would be in Venice or something. Okay.
Yeah. Well, there is but what I'm saying is, like, then you can get, like, the Asian-style wings, which are fantastic. So you can kind of go that route. Like, there's a place called Angry Chicken in Arlington Heights that's fantastic. That's, like, you know, Asian-style. Like, there's so many places around town that you can go. You can get, like, a fancy wing joint. Like, there's places that, like, are more fancy, but they also have wings. There's a good place in Hollywood I've been to, Hot Wings Cafe. That one's pretty good.
Can you describe for me, like, how do you eat the wing? Like, do you just eat everything, like, all the skin and the fat and
everything?
Or do you take all the meat out?
Yeah, I devour it. I devour it. Just two hands.
Yeah, like, I just give Nevin my wings.
If it's
Nevin
a drumstick, then one hand. And if it's a flat, the two hands, and you just, you know, you get in there.
Just get in there and just, like, eat all the gristle.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay. Can't do it.
Absolutely. 877-710-ESPN. Give me your best wing spot for National Wing Day in town, wherever it is, whatever part of town you live in, 877-710-ESPN. Laura, before the calls come in, where's your spot?
I love Wingstop, just like fast, but if I can go sit down, Alondra's is pretty good.
Ooh, where's that?
Alondra's. I've been to the one, oh my God. I think it's in like Monrovia, Alhambra area.
Right.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I like that place.
Okay. So there you have it. So hit us up, 877-710-ESPN. All right, Momo, before we get to Bill Plaschke and the calls on wings, the Lou Will story, like, where does that one rank on stories that you've had to report on? Because I feel like it has to be pretty high up just in the ridiculous nature of it.
You know, George, I'm actually going to say it was quite low because you're talking to the girl who drove to the brothel in Pahrump when Lamar Odom overdosed out there, right? Like, I did that one.
Yep.
I also did the DeAndre Jordan sit-in. That was a weird one. You know, that was like a, I mean, like things you right. can't believe the you're emoji reporting battle. On.
Yeah.
The emoji battle. That was like crazy.
Yeah.
So like this was, yeah, I guess it's up there. Like it's up there in terms of like, yeah, where I really, I mean, there was this point when I was trying to confirm it where you, and I ended up doing quite a deep dive on Reddit and Instagram, just looking for photos because, you know, the Jack Harlow photo was one photo that was the one that everybody has mentioned. Mm-hmm. But if you do some Reddit diving, which is apparently reporting in 2020, there are other photos that show Lou, and I don't know if they've been substantiated by NBA investigators or not, but he seemed, because it's hard because he's always wearing a white t-shirt, like that's like what he wears. So he could be an old photo, but there's several other photos that I saw of him at the club where he's not wearing a mask and there are other people there. And some of them look like entertainers. Okay. it's a blurry
hey,
photo.
Hey, the lady's got to make money, Momo.
I'm not judging. I don't judge. But I think the thing that everyone is not getting about that story, like even though there's so many elements of it that are just like hilarious, right? Like it's funny, it's a light story in some ways, but it's also like incredibly serious. And I'll tell you, like when I was talking to people in the NBA about it, they're mm-hmm. like, I think I might have talked to four or five general managers that morning. I guess it was Saturday morning because Friday is when I heard about it. Mason and Ireland were talking about it. I didn't really know what they were talking about, and I was like, what are these Jack Harlow? I didn't even know who that was. Like, I'm sorry, I'm old and I listen to Coco Melon most of the time. I didn't even know who that was. I kind of saw the TMZ quote that he gave where he was like, oh, it's an old picture.
Yeah, but, yeah. Old picture with him wearing an NBA mask.
Uh-huh. So like Saturday morning when I was like looking into this, I was like, is this true? I mean, that's an NBA mask. That's what they gave to everyone in the bubble. Uh-huh. So I was trying to assess like, is this a story or not a story? Not a story, right? Every person I talked to in the NBA, like I talked to four or five teams that morning, and they were all really upset. And the idea was like everybody has sacrificed so much to be in this bubble that players who leave and do something where that's very high risk. You know, it's whether that's Alex Caruso at a 100-person wedding, whether right. Lou Williams went to a strip club or a Chili's. It doesn't matter. Those are high risk things. Like if you're going to an indoor restaurant where there's lots of other people there, that's a high risk activity. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea that it was a strip club and there was I've seen photos where there's more people in the club than, okay. There's not
course.
Just
I've
him
seen it
and
too.
Jack.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's, I think the DJ had some photos.
Right.
And you see him, he has no mask on. So, right. it, you know, I don't know if those are old photos. That's the only one. All I can right. say is, you know, it doesn't take that much diving on Reddit or Instagram to find more. I'm sure the NBA investigators did that too. That's why people were upset. That's why it's like, yeah, it is a funny story, but it's also this sense of, you know, nobody wants to be the person who messes up the bubble, right? Nobody wants right. to be
yeah,
the
yeah.
person who creates a Marlins type situation. Like, I bet we're going to find out how the Marlins all got it.
Oh,
like,
for there's sure
been,
we will.
Yeah. There's been some rumors about something happened on the team charter. They think that's where it all spread, the team charter when they flew that night.
Right.
We're going to find out who patient zero was and how they got it. And people are going to be mad because, you know, somebody didn't do it. Now, Marley Rivera had a tweet the other day that just stopped me in my tracks. Like she said, she's spoken to two different managers of teams that have traveled and been on the road during this. And they're really upset about the hotels they've been going to.
They're having weddings and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah. It's
oh,
crazy.
My goodness.
Yeah. It's
so like,
nuts.
That's why people are mad because there's been a lot of sacrifice, collective sacrifice, not
right.
just of players, but of coaches, of like PR directors, personnel, trainers. They're all away from their families for 3.5 months so that you can create a safe environment. So if one person leaves the bubble, then goes and does, you know, a really high risk activity, it puts everyone else in danger. And whether Lou picked up the virus, whether he was safe or not while he was there, it's like being in a crowded nightclub situation is just not
yeah,
safe.
Yeah, no, it's not ideal. Yeah, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
Hey, the Sedano Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Bill Plaschke will join us in a second. Let me grab a couple of quick calls here on the wings. It is National Chicken Wing Day. Where are the fire wings here in L.A.? Zach is on 710 ESPN. What's up, Zach?
Sedano, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Yes, sir. It's called Killer Wings in Panorama City off of Van Nuys and Nordoff, a little mom and pop spot. And it's,
nice.
I recently just found it, by the way, and really good prices as well. Like 10 wings for like $11,
you
know,
bad.
Kind of the jumbo wings. So it's a real good deal as far as the amount of food and the price goes. And I think that's great. Really quickly, if you don't mind, I'm a Momo.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity to meet you at the roast of Steve Mason.
Oh, and that was fun.
Yeah, you took a picture with me, and that was great. Greg Bergman, I had the opportunity to meet you as well, so I just wanted to say thank you all for that. It was a really nice time. But, yeah, Killer Wings, Panorama City, Van Nuys and Nordoff.
818.
Go ahead.
818, man. I love it. You're shouting out the valley.
One more thing, though, for, you know, everybody listening. It's got to be bone in. It can't be the boneless.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with
nugget.
You. Yes. You're just eating a chicken nugget. I am 100% with you, Zach, and thank you for the call. And thank you for making that distinction, actually. Luis is in Bell. What's up, Luis?
Hey, what's up? My number one wings I got to go to, I got to go Big Al's Wings in Maywood.
Okay, Big Al's. Give us the cross streets. Do you know them?
All right. On Atlantic Boulevard, right off of Randolph and 60, between Randolph and 61st. My second choice was going to go with Alondra's, but they already mentioned it. But you can't go wrong with Alondra's either.
All right, buddy. Thank you, brother. Stay safe and stay healthy. You and Zach, who called earlier. So you go. Hit us up with your fire wings. Bill Plaschke is going to join us in 3 minutes. Sedano Show continues here on ESPN 710, 710 ESPN. Mama Momo hanging out. Ramona Shelburne, as she does every Wednesday. The great Bill Plaschke will join us in a second. The show is brought to you by Pennzoil Synthetic Motor Oils, made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. And Nature Valley Crunchy Bars, whether you're taking in your favorite lookout or lawn chair, sitting on your porch, or hanging out in the park, Nature Valley Sweet and Salty Bars will help you make the most of your outdoor time. Enjoy a creamy, crunchy, sweet and salty bar wherever you are. Bill Plaschke, the legendary columnist at the LA Times, giving us the Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Bill, good to have you on. Good to talk to you again. Look, coronavirus aside, where does yesterday rank as far as anticipation for a regular season Dodger game?
Yeah, it was the most anticipated regular season game in a long time. It was the one game that could maybe make us forget for 9 innings about the coronavirus. I mean, everybody was, you know, even with all that's going on in baseball, the game's in danger, the schedule's in danger. I think people put it aside, all that aside, especially Dodger fans, just for one night of revenge. And for 5 innings, they didn't get any. For 5 innings, the Dodgers were so dull. And they were winning the game, but they were typical dull Dodgers. You know, Buehler just throwing strikes, you know, not coming inside at all. And the hitters chipping out little singles. And they get a 5-2 lead, and everything is calm. And I think everybody was frustrated watching this game. They're winning, but where's the revenge for 2017? Where's the retribution? Where's the anger? Where's the emotion? And then welcome to L.A., Joe Kelly. Whoa!
I mean, Bill, you know what was great about last night was, like, I feel like every game that I've watched so far, I've been like, oh, cool, baseball's back. Like, I'm into this, but it's just different because there's no fans. And, you know, it's set amidst the pandemic. And you're right. Like, it felt like I was just thinking about baseball. I wasn't thinking about the Marlins or the safety protocols or the people wearing the masks or anything like that. I was like, it's just baseball. And I love this one line. I think your beat writer had it in his line. When they cleared the benches, it was like there was no social distancing. Like they weren't all wearing masks. It was like, I don't want to laugh about it because, like, I hope nothing happened when they all cleared the benches. But that was a symbol to me of, like, oh, we just forgot it was 2020 and this whole year sucks. Like, this was just baseball, and it was the game. It was the way that I think everybody in baseball had been waiting for that moment of, like,
yeah.
Who's gonna...
I agree. The writer Jorge Castillo does a great job. It was baseball was fun again, and I know it might not have been so fun for the Astros and so fun for Alex Bregman and Carlos Correa, but it was fun for baseball fans again, who have been waiting. All of baseball have been waiting for this. All of baseball have been waiting. And the thought was the Astros are going to get off the hook this year because, like you said, no fans, no jeering, nobody banging trash cans in the stands. The players all afraid to throw inside because they don't want to have a bench clearing brawl that could be dangerous to their health. Everybody, you know, stayed away from each other, you know, social distancing. Everybody thought the Astros were going to get a pass this year. And then Joel Kelly said, no, he's not giving anybody a pass. I mean, it was. Now, I know some people are going to say, this is Joel Kelly who broke a window at his house during the pandemic shutdown in a video. This is Joel Kelly who's naturally wild. This is Joel Kelly who broke Hanley Ramirez's ribs in 2013 in the playoffs for the Dodgers when he pitched for the Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
He's just wild and nutty. But you can't tell me that after he put Bregman down, that he threw three times to first base to put him in the dirt. That proved to me that he knew exactly what he was doing. It was exactly his throws to first base, his three pickoff throws to a runner who doesn't steal in a situation that doesn't call for stealing. Just, I think he was trying to hit him on the ground. And then of course what transpired with all the inside pitches. And then I love his baby face and his mocking impressions as he walked off the mound. That was just absolutely priceless. And he spoke for legions of not just Dodger fans, but fans everywhere who, you know, sorely remember that of all the cheating the Astros did, the title wasn't vacated. The trophy wasn't given back. The players weren't punished. Something had to happen. Last night finally happened.
Mm.
Bill Plaschke joining us here of the LA Times. Subscribe to the LA Times. Support journalism. We do. I do, at least.
Me too.
So, Bill, on the flip side with the Astros, my biggest takeaway when I was watching that was like, you know, it's a lot easier when there's a bunch of trash cans or whistling or all sorts of shenanigans going on to hit the baseball. Didn't seem so easy last night. What was your biggest takeaway from the Astros?
Yeah, they have a really bad bullpen. They have like nine rookies in their bullpen making their major league debuts. So the pressure's on the hitters, and the hitters crumbled under the pressure. They got, after Joel Kelly unsettled them, they got two hits, or they got one hit the last three innings to get the Dodger bullpen. They aren't the powerful, mighty Astros if they can't be the cheating Astros. There is no help for them now. There's nobody, and there's really nobody in the stands to cheat for them. The video guys are all monitored and covered up and quarantined. This is a team left on its own devices. I don't, you know, they're talented, but they're not that tough. And I thought it was interesting afterward, Bregman was asked about getting knocked down, and he didn't say a word about it. He didn't complain. He didn't cry. He didn't moan because he knew they had it coming. They've been waiting for this. They knew it was. Dusty Baker complained, but he's always complained about something. And he wasn't part of that 2017 team. Bregman said nothing. When people asked him, was it a purpose pitch? What do you think? Were you upset? He just said, I'll pass on that question, because he knew he had it coming. And that was crazy. And Joel Kelly, one of the guys on the team who was not on that 2017 team. In fact, Joel Kelly has been maligned by Dodger fans. He was the guy that gave up the grand slam to Howie Kendrick last year at the end of the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy on the mound. He was their villain. And yet he became the best teammate they had. And the Dodgers need that. They need that in this town. They just signed Mookie Betts to a huge deal, but Mookie Betts is a quiet leader. He's following Kershaw, who's a quiet leader. They're a quiet, calm clubhouse, and that's what helps them win seven straight division championships. That doesn't necessarily help them win in the playoffs, and it hasn't helped them win in the playoffs. They need spark. They need fire. They need energy. They need passion. They needed Joel Kelly last night.
Bill, what do you think happens tonight?
Nothing.
Really?
Nothing done. Yeah, I don't think. Well, Dustin May's pitching. You know, you got a rookie out there pitching. He's not going to do anything.
Well, do you think the Astros, though, fire back at the Dodgers?
Absolutely not, because I think Bregman is their clubhouse leader. I'm guessing from the tone of his comments last night, they knew they had it coming. They just got to suck it up. That would be my opinion. I don't think it would be any way. I'd be stunned if there's retaliation, because I just think also the Astros have a bunch of young arms, too, who haven't been out there very long and don't know, weren't around. There's only like eight guys on that team. Now, I think they'd be stupid to do that. I think they had been waiting for this. I think they're just hoping the worst passes. I don't think so. I mean, in fact, furthermore, they were the only team worn last night. As Dusty Baker said in the brawl, the Dodgers weren't worn. The Astros were worn. So the first inside pitch, somebody's getting thrown out of the game. And these games count 2.5 times what normal games count. Every game's too important for them to get thrown out. I don't think anything happened. I think what happened, happened. I mean, I'd be stuck. And the Dodgers aren't going to do anything. That's for sure. They just want to get out of town with another win and move on. So we'll see. But I think if there was fans in the stands, maybe. The fans is, and you make a great point, Momo. The fans, that's really taken away from the energy of these games, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's hard to even follow the game sometimes, because your eyes go to the ball when the fans roar or when they sigh or when they boo, or it's just, and the players react to that. I think it's, I don't know what it's gonna be like in the NBA, but I've been to Dodger Stadium for the opener, and it was just fake. It was, the noise sounded like a bunch of ghosts. It was like noise from outside the stadium. It was ghostly and creepy and weird. And so I think they need a game like last night to bring some passion into it. I don't know how they're going to get that passion every night, though. And I think if they had that passion, if there were fans in the stands, maybe something would happen. I don't think anything happens.
Bill, we're up against it. Thank you so much for taking the time. The great Bill Plaschke at the LA Times. Subscribe to the LA Times. Support journalism. You're the best, brother. Thanks again.
Anytime, guys. You guys are the best. Dad. Call me anytime.
You got it. Take care. There he is, Bill Plaschke. All right, coming up next, Momo, what you need to know here on 710 ESPN. Back in 2 minutes.